Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Sync Exchange podcast. I'm your host, Mark Freezer, and today we are with the founder and CEO of Veritonic, Scott Simonelli. Scott, how are you doing today?
Hey, Mark. How are you?
Good. You know, just happy to be here with you so we can tell everybody a little bit about what you guys do, which is actually pretty exciting because you're applying technology to allowing people to understand the full potential of how music lifts the messaging and the impact of brands, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Can't say it any better than that. And then really we came to this with the idea of how do we help people find the best music to put in that ad, in that spot, wherever it needs to go. And we found that people were overwhelmed with the process of choosing music.
Right.
And no matter whether you're a brand or a publisher or an agency or you're trying to find the right music or if you're choosing between a bunch of different tracks, there's really no way to ask the audience.
That's true.
And that's something that we came to build that platform and work with a lot of brands today and help them make those choices. And really, you know, we look at the value of the decision. Like, you know, you can choose any piece of music really in any ad and you can justify any piece of music, whether it's $1 million or free.
Right.
But why go with this piece of music or that piece of music? And how much does it matter? What we found also is that music matters more than I think people get credit for in a lot of cases. And sometimes it's in the background. But at the end of the day, that's our goal. Every day we wake up every morning and say, how can we help people get the best possible music in the ad? And how can we make the music selection process as easy as possible?
Cool. So let's come back to that in a second. But why don't you give us a little bit of an idea of where the genesis of this company came from? Because, you know, on its surface, this is a great idea. Don't you want to be able to make the best choices that you can in terms of what you are doing in a production? You know, and right. if you were Coke or Pepsi, you're going to want to get messaging that works the best to sell more, you know, sugar water. And at the end of the day, the music is a big part of that. And not every brand realizes that, but at the end of the day, somebody's watching something for 30 seconds, 15 seconds, 60 seconds, whatever it is, every single piece of that is impactful, you know? And to discount the music while emphasizing, oh, we've got to make sure the copy is right and it looks right, you know, is sort of doing a disservice to yourself and your audience, right?
Yeah, it is. And I think, you know, voice of the audience today is there's a lot of technology and a lot of, you know, systems and
sure.
to try to help people understand how people, you know, what your audience is doing. You can track them, you can
yeah.
you can talk to them, you can do a lot of things. And in the genesis, you know, to your question, I was a composer just like every other composer, trying to write what I was asked to write.
Right.
And, you know, I was just frustrated. Sometimes you nail it. Sometimes you gave them something and they loved it. And you know, write this is a masterpiece. And everything you write, you think is a masterpiece, of course. And then you joke to someone,
of course.
This is a masterpiece. Of course this is a masterpiece. And every once in a while you get the, well, I want it to be more this or I want it to be more that. And you hear some ridiculous things. And I was, you know, at the time didn't know any better. You know, it's like, well, I hate these people. Or these people, they don't get it. Or, you
right.
know, they're not seeing what I'm seeing or hearing what I'm hearing, and they're wrong or they're right. And there was just the usual
it's a sort of headbutting between
headbutting,
like, you know, the creative
right.
and the, you know, the strategic.
Yeah, and it's to be
yeah.
expected.
Yeah.
And then after being a composer, I was working at Sony and I met a guy who was starting a testing company. And I didn't really know anything about testing or anything like that. And we worked together, and I really liked this guy, so I kind of did it kind of on a whim. And
yeah.
after working there for a number of years, and that company is now part of HP, it's since been acquired, and seeing how much rigor and thought went into the smallest decision. Should this submit button be green or red? Should this line of copy say, you know, one word or another? You know, should the punctuation be different? Should be a comma here? And a lot of testing went into that, and that kind of, while I was still moonlighting as a composer, I'm thinking, like, well, wait a second. They didn't make any decision with any rigor about what music to use in this ad. And these are the same brands who are spending, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars a day to test this, or millions of dollars a year to test these things. Why are they choosing the music based on, you know, what the CEO's wife liked or something, you know, totally arbitrary?
Yeah.
And that's when the light bulb kind of went off. And then I kind of could put two and two together. And I was at a weird intersection that I don't think, you know, a lot of people kind of arrive at the place of, you know, multivariate testing and statistical significance, and music composition. And I kind of was at this weird intersection. Yeah. And then I didn't do anything about it for 5 years. I did something totally different.
Right.
I kind of had it. And then as it kind of came back around, I went to some friends and talked about it. And now testing is much more commonplace, you know, online anyway. You know,
sure.
It's always been around elsewhere. And music, there's just such demand for music. There's so much multimedia content being created. There's certainly music being used in all these places.
Of course.
And we kind of said, well, should people be testing the music in their apps?
Right.
The same way they test everything else. And that was it right there. That question is veritonic. You test everything else, why not test the music? Why not find out, is this piece of music different than this piece of music? Because of course it is.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily better or worse. Right? It's just different. And you might choose this versus that. And sometimes there's a winner versus a control or a benchmark. But sometimes
sure.
It's like, well, I just want to know, I want to have more information as to how people are responding to this piece of music so I can make a decision. And that's really the genesis of it. And it's kind of stuck so far. So we're going with it.
And I mean, look, I think it's great because, you know, there's so many factors that come into play when there is a creative process, whether it's storytelling or, as in the case of most of our conversation, it's brand messaging and brand engagement and campaigns. But regardless of which one it is and how many people are in the room, you know, it really comes down to understanding that at the end of the day, this is probably the only sphere of the music business where you're not looking at music from a subjective point of view. It's an objective tool. It's a tool for a job. And, you know, like any other tool for a job, you know, you have to test which one works better. And it's not about bad or good. It's about appropriateness versus not appropriateness. Because, listen, you can have the crappiest EDM track, right? And you can have an amazing heavy metal track. But the heavy metal track is not going to work at all for like a Tide ad.
Right.
It's just, I can't conceive Tide using that.
Right.
But some crappy EDM might be exactly what they need.
Exactly.
And having statistics to understand that better, and you know, this is what brands do every day. It's like
right.
you said, A-B testing.
Right.
I mean, A-B testing, yeah, at the beginning of the internet, nobody thought about it. But testing is part of how multi-million dollar decisions are made every day. And why isn't music a part of that? You know, basically, that sort of boggles the mind when you think about it based on what the objective is.
Yeah, now when we first started the company, the most common thing we heard wasn't, that's a crazy idea, it was, no one's doing that?
Yeah.
And I was like, no. And the funny thing is multi-million dollar corporations do it, but we do it every day.
Right.
I might test, you know, which pair of shoes I like better, or which kind of tea I drink by trial and error. Right?
Yeah.
I go to Starbucks and buy like their coffee versus someone else's coffee, and it's the same with music. It's the same with anything. That's where, you know, it's the way humans behave.
Exactly.
And ultimately, you're selling products to humans. So,
yeah.
At least for now.
Right.
So, like, you know, brands are doing that on just a much larger scale. And that's where the other thing too that's cool about music versus a lot of other subject matter is, you know, we would test the red button versus the green button. It's really not that interesting to test.
No.
It's always nice to see how things do. I'm always curious.
Of course.
And I think that's what makes it fun to talk about. Like, people are always curious, well, did this do better for, you know, women age 40 in the West Coast versus, you know, 20-year-old males in New York? And of course they're going to, you know, respond differently to this or that. But music is so rich.
Yeah.
It's such a rich subject matter that a 5-second clip of the same track, you know, could be fundamentally different than something later on in that same piece of music.
Yeah.
Or when paired with a different visual, the same piece of music. For example, you know, heavy metal music versus, you know, cheap EDM, you know, could be, with different visual, could be totally right on.
Or a different brand.
Right.
You know, or a different market.
Right. Or the middle, the bridge section of that heavy metal song would be.
Yeah,
they sound like crappy EDM.
Yeah, exactly. You never know, right?
To a certain audience. And
yeah.
So, like, it's such a rich subject matter with so many nooks and crannies and so many stories to tell that there's never a boring conversation, for sure. And there's always surprises that what works and doesn't work. And sometimes it's good to know what not to do also. I think
right. Sometimes,
like, you know, your top two or three tracks, if they all kind of sound the same or something like that, that's good. You know, you could go either way there.
Yeah.
Maybe you ruled out three or four things and saved yourself, you know, 2 weeks of.
Well, that to me is the biggest value add, is getting rid of the, you know, the crap.
Yeah, just get the crap out.
Put it over there and let's really concentrate on what we think is usable.
Right.
And if you can help to, like, you know, streamline that process, then it's a big winner.
Yeah.
So, okay. So tell us how the system actually works. So let's say that I'm a brand manager at LG.
Okay.
In the phone division.
Okay.
And we're about to get put out a new version of an OLED phone or something like that. And I want to have some music that's going to help to sort of represent something that's fresh and new and really vibrant, you know, because we have a vibrant screen that we're emphasizing is the key value add to our phone, because really all these phones have the same software, but we have this really cool OLED screen that nobody else has. How are we going to make it so that, you know, the music helps to get that message across? Well, what can we do, right? We can go to a composer, we can go license music. There's a lot of things that we can do to get that music. We can hire an outside music supervisor, whatever it is. Or we can just rely on our agency to take, you know, what we've talked about and present us with something and do a big reveal. Now, doing the big reveal sometimes works, sometimes doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess what I'm getting at here with all of this is, if I'm the brand manager, how does Veritonic, A, help me get closer to the music, and B, help me to understand that the music is a really important choice in what I'm doing as a marketer?
Right. Great. So, and that's a great example. And the first thing is Veritonic is speaking marketer. Everything about our platform and the way we interact, you know, even the people at the company, we're talking marketing speak.
Right.
And we're trying to eliminate a little bit of that translation that has to occur between a marketing brief and a marketing goal and a marketing plan, and then that gets translated into music metadata. You know,
right.
And then now there's still, you know, there's people who are going to do that. So you may go to your composers, you may go to your agents, you may do all the things you just said. The first challenge you're going to have is what we call the infinite defining challenge.
Sure.
Right? There's no shortage of music, right? There's going to be tons of music that people will, and if you call any of those people that you listed, of course, and like when I was a composer, everything's a masterpiece. So they're all going to say, we have music that aligns with your marketing goal.
Yeah.
They're not going to say we don't. So the first thing you can do is kind of use our platform to do a search, which we call Discover. And we have thousands of tracks that we're indexing from publishers. We're not actually in the music business.
Right.
And so we have publisher partners that we work with. Or you might just take all the tracks from those people that they send you, they're going to submit a bunch of tracks, and then put them in and try to just narrow the field.
Right.
You've got thousands you can search, and you actually plug in to our system, you know, a demographic, you know, so gender, age, household income, anything that's in that brief. Then you're also looking, so that's like kind of your audience.
Right.
Then you're also looking at, how do I want them to feel while they're listening to this? So are you able to, and we'll get into the details at some point.
Yeah.
But not to get too into the weeds. We're basically inferring how people are feeling while they're listening to that music. We have a way to do that. And there's tracks that we've already done that with, or you could take the tracks that you got from your agency or your composers or your partners and get them in there. And so let's see how people are feeling in that audience while they're listening. Then what do they feel after the fact? The thing about music that's so unique is it's got a memorability factor that's very strong, and it's got an association factor that's very strong. So when you hear a piece of music, you're going to associate it with certain things. Like, you know, whenever I hear Nirvana or Pearl Jam, I associate that with driving, because that's when I got my driver's license and I was rolling down the windows. Now, you might not have that association if you're 3 years older than me or 3 years younger than me.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you weren't in that age. So we kind of look at the associations. And then what that does is it says, all right, to your point, let's eliminate the crap. Maybe, you know, the custom audio or this track may cost us this and this and that. And then the tracks, red tracks, or the index, out of the millions of possibilities, here's 15 that score well against my marketing goal, against my creative brief. And I've plugged that information in, and I've kind of went from infinite to finite. And then what you might do is maybe you get visuals, maybe you've got an ad, it's, you know, you're getting closer to production.
Right.
And maybe you're using a reference track or some sync track or kind of just something in there. And then we go for, all right, let's get from 15 and let's figure out which one is the strongest.
Right.
So then we actually will take that music and then run it through our system again, with those specific goals in mind, and say, all right, let's develop a score. based on these associations, these feelings, these emotions for this target demographic, which could be the whole U.S., it could be Japan, it could be whatever.
Right.
And then let's look and see how that responds with and without the visual. Because you also want to understand how it's playing with the visual. You can't ignore that. Or if there's voiceover.
Yeah.
And then you're taking that list of 15 or 20 or 10, whatever it was, and saying, well, this is the top performing one based on this criteria. And I want to be statistically confident in that metric. I want to be able to say with high degree of confidence, 95% confidence, that this performs better. And then
right.
sometimes you'll have some that are very close, and you might say, well, it could go either way with these one or two. And that's more about tightening. So,
yeah.
you know, if you're a brand manager and you come in, it's like, well, let's make this music selection process a little easier. Let's streamline this. Let's not spend months going back and forth to going from infinite to the short list.
Yeah.
And once you've got that short list, let's not argue about what works better or not. And let's test those with the visual and see what works and what doesn't. And then we're also looking at once the ad's out there, let's see how it's playing over time. So we also look at recall scores and things like that. So you might put something in the market and say, well, you know, now this is scoring better in July than it did in May. Or people are, you know, are remembering this. That, you know, we actually will test things and see if people think they remember it. you know, things like that. So if you've got a mnemonic device or an audio, we all really just focus on that. So those are the two big functions. So you can log in and do this yourself. Sometimes it's the agency logging in on behalf of the client. And kind of setting up these tests or doing these searches. And sometimes it's somebody just calling us up and saying, hey, I got 15 tracks, test them and, you know, send me a link to the report.
Tell me what works best.
Yeah, yeah. So it depends on the client. Some people are just more hands-on.
You know, it's interesting because I can see the value add is very clear for the brand manager. I can see the value add as being clear for the rights owner, you know,
right.
if it's a publisher or a label. Where I see that there may be some reticence, even though it's really useful for them, is at the agency side, where it's like, okay, are they saying to me now that this thing, which is usually a creative process, is now going to be a data-driven process? I don't know if that sits well with everybody. I mean, naturally, you would think, okay, from a intellectual point of view, yes, of course, I want to have all the tools at my disposal I need, but the creative people, you know how they are.
No, and I'm a creative person myself.
Right.
And I would resist it, and as they should.
Yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't expect anything other than that. And I think we found is we've also tried to improve the process, improve the workflow, communication between the agency and the client. So there's
right.
a value out there. Just to
okay.
make it easier to get files to people is part of what our technology does, which is table stakes, but at the same time, you know, it's a lot easier for the client to like what you've done. They can actually open the file on their computer.
Of course.
I know it sounds crazy, but I can't tell you even today. It's like, well, I'm on a PC and somebody sent me, you know, a movie file and you know, a WAV file, and I can't even download and I can't see the visual with the audio, and it's like, whatever. So there's a little bit of that. That's kind of a way we help agencies. But also, I think over time, as a creative person, you want to have this information. The client's going to test it anyway.
Exactly.
Right? There's no getting around this stuff. If it's a national ad, it's going to test. It's going down that road.
Yeah.
I think what I've also found is it helps inform the creative process.
Yeah.
You might write a different, if you kind of do a search and say like, wow, these are scoring really well. This is great. Like, I might want to write a custom track that goes more down this path.
Right.
Or we find with music, and this is really unique to music alone, is no one's got the patience to listen to an entire 3-minute track. They're just not. You know?
It's true. I never do.
I'm going, it's
like needle drop, needle drop. Okay, needle drop and out.
And we've got some publisher partners where these guys know their library, you know, and girls know their library so well. Like they know.
They don't have to.
But after like 100 tracks, like, you know, who knows how much you know.
Right.
But like what it can do for you is say, wow, like say I'm pulling music. Say I'm in an agency and you know, as we know, a lot of music now is sync.
Right.
So it's like, well, could I pull something they never would have thought of that I never would have thought of? Right? This is an opportunity to
be. And that's really cool.
And be the hero, right? No one's going to ask how you found it. They're not going to be like, did you use Veritonic to find that music or not?
No, they'll be like, wow, that's awesome.
I found the middle section of a Megadeth track that works perfect for your Procter & Gamble. Well, you know,
exactly.
It's like you're a genius now because you found something, because that sea of music is so thick, and they're so, it's so rich and so dense.
Yeah.
If you had a better way to look at music, and a better way to kind of find things based on actual response data from an audience, then you're going to find things that other people aren't finding, which I think it empowers creativity. And we're not, I've been in the testing business for a while. You know, Optimus was around for, you know, 7 or 8 years before we were acquired, which is a testing company that, you know, started way back when. And Veritonic now, I'm 2 years in. There's no silver bullet. Testing doesn't come in and make some artificial intelligence decision based on some algorithm and people just blindly follow.
No, of course.
It's a piece of information that you have and hopefully makes, you know, helps you make a better decision.
It's a tool. Yeah. You know what it's like? It's like it's basically like, you know, you can't unscrew a screw or screw a screw in without a screwdriver.
Right.
You know, basically this is something that's helping you to do your job, but it's not going to do your job for you.
Right.
Ultimately, you have to make the creative decisions, and you need to be able to have that ability to stand or fall based on your capabilities and your experience. But this is a tool that can help you to get there faster.
And increase the value of music, right? So that tie raises all those ships. If you're in the music business, you want music to be as valuable a marketing asset as possible.
Yeah.
Right? And it's not, it's certainly as a consumer product, you know, it's coming back a little bit, but music as a consumer product is, the value is kind of fluctuated. But like, the more, if there's better data that says our audience responds to this, the brand's going to put more value on a piece of music.
Absolutely.
The more value they put on a piece of music, the more valuable the person choosing music becomes. It's not a threat. And that's where I think, like, over time, it's going to change. Again, whether Veritonic goes away or not, like, these things are going to happen. There will be better data. There will be automation. There will be better ways to make marketing decisions. Those things are going to happen. They're happening.
I agree 100%.
So I think in time we'll see that. We've got agencies who we work with now who are the early adopters. And those guys are, you know, kind of leaning into the wind a little bit, I think. They're kind of in the middle, to your point. But if you're a publisher, it's increasing the value of what you sell.
Right, exactly.
So that's pretty much a no-brainer. You've got inventory on a shelf, and we make that inventory more valuable.
Yeah.
Easy to figure out.
It's an easy step.
They're actually the easiest.
Yeah.
The brands, I think they test everything anyway. They've got to stand by their decisions. And whether they're a direct marketer where this music got me 10% more phone calls, which we've done.
Yeah.
That's easy. That's an easy one. That's a slam dunk. Versus I slept a little better at night because if someone called me and asked me why I use this piece of music, I can say I tested it.
Right.
That works too. Like, that's the brand role. And then the agency, it is about creativity. It is about choosing the best piece of music, but it's also about finding the piece of music that's going to get the response you're looking for.
Yeah,
and that's where I think we help the most. And I think, and if the workflow, if they can actually, we can help them actually hear the music on the computer.
Well, if you can help them with that simple thing too, that's helpful.
A little minor roadblock becomes. Yes.
So, you know, there's another thing that came up in my mind in terms of the value that you bring that I really don't think a lot of people would think initially, but you bring greater value not just to the publishers and their inventory, but you bring great value to the artists themselves. Because what happens so much of the time, not all the time, but so much of the time, is that if a track is used from an artist, then the brands a lot of the time get interested and say, what more can we do with this artist? Mm. Can we have a deeper relationship with them?
Right.
And that can lead to a lot of other things. And this is more talking a little bit more secondary, the managers and the artists. But at the end of the day, you know, if you can show that there's value in that music and that there's resonance in that music, maybe there's a place for the brand to get involved on a deeper level with that artist in terms of endorsement, in terms of merchandising, in terms of partnerships. So there's a lot of interesting things that I think come from understanding the value of the music and its impact more.
That's a great point. It's funny. You actually got right to the core. Here's the golden nugget of the podcast.
Yeah.
You know, so like, if you've been listening this far, here it is. And it's funny. My original business plan for Veritonic, one of the things I thought about was, as a composer, the better I knew my audience, the better music I could write. Like, if you were inside your audience's head and you knew exactly what they wanted to hear and what they, and you can kind of manipulate their feelings that way, you would write better music. You'd have a one-to-one channel.
Yeah.
And the great artists and the great composers and any, the great artists in any medium they really understand their audience.
Maybe you have to, yeah.
And this gives an opportunity to do that. So in my original business plan, this isn't something I've never, you know, we've never talked about this.
Right.
I actually have a video. I'd written something for my parents' 50th anniversary. I'd written a little song, and I had my, you know, six-year-old, or since he was six at the time, my son sing this song to my parents at their anniversary. I had a video of that. The business plan. No one actually never shared this before. So, but I knew exactly what they would go for. Not who knows if it was a good song or not. It really didn't matter because I knew that with my six-year-old son singing it, and the kind of music that my parents would like, whatever, like, this was going to work.
Right.
And if a composer and a brand and can make that connection up, they really know.
Yeah.
The audience. Like we've looked at hundreds of people in this demographic. We know what they're listening to, what they associate when they hear this artist and when they hear this music or whatever it is. And we know exactly what our brand wants to accomplish and how we want to make people feel. You can get validation in that alignment. There's tremendous value there.
Absolutely.
You've got proof of it. And you're going to create better stuff that you haven't done yet. So now, like, you know, if everybody knew, my premise was that if everybody knew their audience as well as I knew what my parents would want to hear, then you'd write great music for that audience. So you could make great ads for that audience and sell a lot of product for that audience if you knew them that well.
Right.
And it's funny that you got to that place because that's really at the core of it.
We never
talk about that example. This is my very, you know, these old PowerPoint decks from, you know, they look like a... the picture of you in like eighth grade or whatever, where you're like,
sure, of course.
Oh, that's
he did that.
Yeah. So the original business plan, it's got a lot of terrible slides on it, but that nugget is exactly what you said.
Yeah, and I think it's something that's important for artists to understand. I don't want to go down this point too far, but the thing is, I think it's important for artists to understand that at the end of the day, you're an artist, and you know what? You can create whatever you want. Sometimes you create stuff that's good for you and nobody else, and that actually turns out to resonate.
Right.
But you know, when you're talking about something where it's a tool for the job case and you really want to be successful in this arena, a tool like this helps you to be more successful, to understand the choices that you're making. And yeah, you know what? You do sort of know from your gut, you know, the general direction of your audience. But if there's something that can help you, especially if you're somebody, like you said, who's writing for this part of the business, you really owe it to yourself to be able to make, you know, decisions better.
Right, and for all you know, the stuff that works well for you, you know, yes, maybe other people just like me like that music also.
Sure.
But for all I know, people in Bulgaria, you know, who are not like me at all, really like this. And it doesn't do well here, where I thought it would do well.
Yeah.
We see, you know, a lot of our brands, you know, some of them are going for national appeal. Some of them are going for very specific audiences. And it's funny, the more specific the audience that the brand would be going for, we have one client who is very focused on, you know, affluent women. It's a health and beauty brand. And their results are much more, there's a lot more diversity and variance in their results because that audience is much more defined. And they're going to go for specific things. What they like, you know, now, they might not like 6 months from now.
Of course.
Because what's on the radio and what's being heard. So when you go national, you kind of have to go for more mass appeal. But there are a lot of composers or brands or just, you know, publishers that are very niche. And actually, you know, if you do what you do well, it works for somebody. And if you can find out who that somebody is, that's really valuable information because very few things work for everybody.
Of course.
And so if you can find out who that somebody is for you, then you've got a whole other kind of, you know, you've opened Pandora's box.
Right, and you can properly serve that market.
Right.
And that's really important. So shifting a little bit back from that. On a practical basis, how does it work? And you don't have to get into the secret sauce, so to speak. But basically, do you work off of panels? Do you work off of algorithms? Is it a combination of both? How do you come up with this data once we take the music and we go here?
It is total smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, exactly. This is a question mark and a funnel.
It's really both. There's a lot of sophisticated kind of math and science you can put behind testing.
Right.
And when you take out the human element, it loses something. You don't want to take that out entirely because you have to understand market, the audience. And I think at some point, like, while people want speed and they want it to be cost effective, that's why that's where you use the algorithms and the
stuff. Yeah, of course.
Because if you just put 100 people in a room, it's going to be very expensive. It's going to be very
expensive very quickly. Yeah.
And that's going away. Like,
yeah.
You know, like, we're also a part of that movement. The idea of a focus group or kind of market research, as we know, is evolving. To scale like everything else. There's a wave going on there.
I always thought focus groups, I'll be honest with you, I always thought that their impact was iffy because I've been in focus groups, I've been on the other side of the mirror, and I always felt like these people wanted to make me happy, and I wanted to make the people on the other side of the mirror happy because they were giving me $100 to like sit there and talk.
Right.
And I thought, hey, this is fun. I want to say nice things about these people.
There's an inherent bias in a focus group, just by nature of the beast.
Yeah.
But there's no other way to get the person, right?
So
that's
true.
That's probably why they still exist today. And they'll do them tomorrow.
Yeah.
The thing about focus groups, though, that has always bothered me as someone who's been in the testing business, is there's not enough quantitative data comes from focus groups. Even if you do an online focus group, you ask people how they feel or what they think or things like that. Like, there's not enough standards out there to kind of say like, well, this is where the decision gets made. This is where the tipping point is. This is where the statistically significant. I asked 100 people, and some felt this way, and I can read through all those transcripts and see, well, this guy liked it, this guy didn't like it. But at what point is there like some science to that where I can actually make a decision? Like we said when we opened up the podcast, like, why does Veritonic exist? We want to help you make a decision.
Right.
And all that, qualitative data, might not help you make a decision. May inform your decision. So what we want to keep the human element. So basically, when we take a piece of music, it could be one track. Literally, just take one track, upload it to Veritonic, and push go. Or it could be a whole library of tracks that every day we're taking a percentage of that library and sending it out through our system. We're always playing it for real live people in a bunch of different settings. The key to this kind of analysis is you want to have random distribution. You want to have people experience that music in a bunch of different ways.
Mm-hmm.
But kind of like in the focus group situation, right, you have that inherent bias of it's that one guy in that one room.
Right.
You want some people to hear it next to this piece of music. You want some people to hear it where they're being asked how they feel. Some people where they're not being asked. Some people where it's with the visual or not with the visual.
Right.
Some people were, they're in New York and some are in LA, and some are male and some are female, and some are on a mobile device and some are on a computer. And you have to kind of play. You have to play it for a lot of people.
Yeah.
What people tend to forget is there's a lot of people out there.
Yeah.
And so whether it's through an ad, where it could be an ad on YouTube, it could be an ad on Facebook, it could be a paid panelist.
Yeah.
And the lion's share of our audience does come from paid panelists. There are many, many paid panelist providers out there. So we will get a few people from one, a few people from another, a few people from here. And there's everyone from Amazon to, Qualtrics and SurveyMonkey.
And that's great because that way you get samples from different sociodemographics that you can plug into your model.
Right. And if there's a panel that's got a bias, they're not going to weight our results too much, So
yeah, exactly.
And it's more economical because we're doing it on such a scale that if you just went and tried to run that panel with that one provider, they're going to charge you a premium. Whereas if you're doing this all day, there's a lot of economy that comes from that scale.
Of course.
But there's also the speed. So now instead of going to this one panel and fishing in this one pond, we're fishing in 100 ponds at once. So I might get 5 people from here and 5 people from here. If we want to hit hundreds of people, which every track is experienced by hundreds of people, you can do that in 24 hours because you're going to all these different places.
Yeah.
So basically in the background, you upload that track, and our system kind of says, well, I need 10 minutes of somebody's time. And that 10 minutes of somebody's time, I'm going to stick your track in with 9 other tracks. Maybe your track is 3 minutes, and I want to get stuck in a couple others. But that's going to happen hundreds of times in hundreds of different situations. And then the results are going to come back. And once you get that massive pile of data, you then have to develop a system to say, all right, how am I going to score this?
Yeah.
And that's important to us. Like, we want to make sure that there's a lot of people can bet their life, we're not like curing a disease here, but at the same time, we want people to be sure that they can say, this is different than this. And like I said earlier, it's not better or worse. This song generates a feeling of happiness more so in this 7 seconds than this song.
Right.
Or this piece of music. And so, or when I pair this one with a visual, in the first 7 seconds, it doesn't work. than it does with this track.
Right. So, or with this part of that song versus the other part of the song.
The other part of the song. Exactly. Yeah. It could be the same song. Or when I take the head flaps out, people actually notice.
Yeah.
Whoa, okay. You know, so that was getting in the way of the voiceover. You know, the message wasn't getting through. It was, we actually looked at like purchase intent. Or people don't remember this audio logo 2 weeks later and they remember this one.
Right.
Or Nationwide scores here on the recall scale because it's Nationwide. And I'm not even in market and I'm here. Wow. Okay, maybe if I were in market, I could be here. You know? And
yeah.
So we basically bring that human element back and we have a scoring system that we spend a lot of time on. And you're always improving on that. And then you literally log in and you see the tracks. You see them with the visual if you've had it. And you say, all right, well, here's my scores. Then I can filter those. I can say, you know, all right, show me this for a general population. Show me this for females. Show me this for males. Show me this for people that have a college degree or household income with this. And then we filter that down. Sometimes I look at a report and say, wow, general populations, this one does really well. When I drill down on my target audience, wow, this one does much better.
Yeah.
So we have a platform to kind of set that up. And we try to make it as easy as possible. It's as easy as choosing some things, uploading your track, and then come back and look at the scores, and you can always retest things. We try to, like I said, embrace the human element.
Sure.
And do it in a way that's economical for the clients. Like, you don't want to, you know, look at this and say, like, well, every time I log in and test the track, I've got to set up a focus group.
Right.
Like, that would be really efficient.
That would be
the problem.
Non-starter.
Well, it wouldn't work for libraries either.
Yeah.
If you're a publisher and you've got thousands of tracks.
How could you do that?
Yeah, you can't
scale that. Yeah.
We try to figure, so we use algorithms in a way where they enhance and harness the human response. And we can predict, like if you test enough people, and say 200 people all felt this way at this time, you've got that data. You could start to make predictions to say that if I tested another 200 people that had these same attributes, I would start to see this response again.
Right.
So you can start to supplement the human element with some predictive capabilities to just keep costs down. But we're never going to take that out.
Right.
And if you want the qualitative data, the focus group, that's really not what we do. We can certainly ask open-ended questions and things like that for custom things, but that's, we find not as useful as a scoring system.
No, I think what we're talking about here at the end of the day is something where it can be a tool in your arsenal that's efficient,
yeah.
You know, and can give you a response in a timeline that's reasonable.
Yeah.
You know, whereas if you want to try and test everything for focus groups, I mean, you know what the problems and the benefits are there.
Yeah.
It's going to be a long, drawn-out process. And, you know, it's just the way it is. But, okay, so let's move on from that. So tell us, if I'm a brand manager, publisher, sync rep, whoever I am, and I want to use Veritronic, how do I do it?
You want to edit that? Because
yeah, of course, Veritronic. I know. I always do this to you. Veritronic, I know.
We get the Tronic a lot.
So. Yeah, I know. I don't know why I said that.
So, like, sorry, what was your question?
Sounds like an electronic band. So basically, my next question is pretty simple. If I'm somebody who makes music, owns music, or uses music, how do I use Veritronic?
Well, I mean, we try to make it, we're in the testing business.
Right.
So to say to not test using us would be hypocrites.
Yeah, kind of disingenuous.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, 99% of the time we start with some kind of proof of concept test. We're actually calling it sound check now.
I like that.
Yeah, let's do a sound check. Let's do have one of these. It's usually either I've got a few tracks. I'm about to launch this ad. I've got a few tracks. I can't decide which one to go with. Let's launch a test. Or we get a lot of times we get that I've got a meeting on Friday.
Right.
And I've got to make a decision. You know, can you tell me? And it's Thursday.
Right.
You know, tell me which track we should go with. Can you test these?
I mean, the answer to that is probably yes.
Yeah.
But
we get them. That's actually, it's funny. That's when agencies. Yeah, like that's when we help agencies the most today is when there is that situation where they got to be from the client.
Of course, of course.
And they're looking for that extra piece of information that's going to make their point. So usually somebody just gives us a call or they fill out a form on our website and it's like, all right, well, there's always like a test type in mind, and that test can vary a lot from client to client.
Right.
If you're a publisher or you've got a library of music, we said, let's take a small part of the library, let's run this through our system, let's get some data, and let's see how it's working. It's not like take your whole library and try to bite off more than we can chew, and that's a good way to test it out too. Let's take 100 tracks. Let's take a couple hundred tracks and just run them through this and say all right, today I've got this metadata on my music. Now I've got this data on these tracks. Let's see how that helps me.
Exactly.
The good thing about it is it is kind of like an accordion. You can start small. You can start with one test. You can start with a few tracks. See the value, demonstrate it, and then grow from there. Most people are usually filling out a form on our website and we'll pick up the phone and call.
Right.
We're also in the phase two. We haven't had this for 20 years. We want to talk to people.
Right.
We want to see how they're using the system. We want to see what they like and what they don't like.
Of course.
We're still in that stage where and we always will be, but after 5-10 years, you start thinking, well, most people are using it this way. We're really curious in seeing how people use the system. We're always adding new little bells and whistles and features just to see what people do. We have certain reports now where one of our clients said, I really wanted to see this.
Right.
And now every report is that way. So, we're always curious. And we learn just as much from the proof of concept as the client does. The situation, seeing, what comes back. And it's always a great story. We also like coming in and helping people interpret the data too. It's not enough just to have a report that says this is the better piece of music.
But why?
And we can provide some context and also help people set up good tests. Sometimes people will try to optimize for everything. And as Andrew, our COO, always says, if you optimize for everything, you'll optimize for nothing.
Exactly.
I have to give Andrew credit. But we make people say, well, what are you trying to learn? And help them, guide them a little bit and make sure they're setting up a test. Especially that first one, you want to make sure you kind of set up a test that's going to be exciting and get you what you're looking for.
Yeah.
And then once, some clients come in and we have, one client, literally 15, 20 times a month, they're setting up tests, their brand, and they're logging in, and some of them, we don't even talk to them, they're doing that. But the first one, we were very involved in.
Right. And that makes sense. So if people want to learn more, and of course, we're going to annotate this conversation on the website, so there'll be lots of links, but we can say it out loud here. What's the basic plug? If people want to learn more, if they want to get in touch with you and, discover how they can use Veritonic as part of their suite of services.
Yeah. The easiest way is to go to our website, www.veritonic.com.
VeritonIC.com.
Yes. I know it's not sexy, it's the way, but it works.
Right.
Obviously,
which is fine.
Yeah. You can always email me, I'm scott@veritonic.com. Easy to
remember.
When you're the founder, you get the first name. That's the easiest way. Like I said, we like to hear from people, even if you're just curious. We have a lot of interesting conversations with different people at agencies and things like that, and publishers and brands where the way the product works today, from those conversations. So definitely we like to hear from people. Also we just started a blog. We're always, putting new things out there, maybe an article about metadata and music.
Definitely send me the link. I'll make sure that we put it out there too. That's very cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, Scott, thank you so much. That was great. And, I think that this is really, really great podcast for anybody that wants to understand how to make better choices and how data can help them to do so when it comes to having impact and engagement enhanced by music. And I think that's really important for people to understand. So thank you so much.